introduce Kip Meek. Now, Kip is the his full CV, or his bio is his full CV. I'm sure that goes for a lot more pages than half a page. His bio is in the papers in front of you, so I don't intend to go through it in detail, except to say that he comes to us with a background as being both a regulator in having worked in Ofcom in the UK, but in far more recent times he has an incarnation as the non-executive chairman of the Broadband Stakeholders Group, which is the industry government forum in the UK for tackling strategic issues across the converging broadband value chain. And so he is here to talk to us about the fact that fast broadband is not just about pipes and about risks and benefits. So could you please all welcome Kip Meek.
Right, well, thank you, David. It's very exciting to be here, a long way from home. What I want to talk to you about today in 20 minutes, more or less precisely, it has to be precise because David's warned me that I'm going to get gonged if I go on beyond that, is really two things. A little bit about the Broadband Stakeholder Group, the BSG, and a little bit about the issues that affect UK broadband. I'm going to be quite succinct on the BSG. It doesn't take a lot of explaining. I think we can debate whether it's got any relevance at all to New Zealand in the panel session afterwards. But I'll try and be a little, I'll dwell a bit more on some of the issues because I think they are very interesting, partly in the context, for example, of the Minister's speech 2 seconds ago. So this is what I'm going to go through, history of the BSG, UK broadband, where we've got to, the Digital Britain Report. The Minister made a passing reference to the Digital Britain Report. It's a very, very important thing for us in the UK and has begun to galvanise the industry is very relevant to the whole broadband debate. And then sort of basically where to next for the UK. So the BSG, it was set up in 2001 at a time when UK broadband was making very, very slow progress, I think it would be fair to say. It was set up partly at the initiative of the then minister, a guy called Stephen Timms, but I think the key thing about it is that from the beginning it had industry support, and I think it's not something that is essentially led by government, it's essentially led by industry. And when I talk about industry, as you'll see in a moment, I mean the whole broadband value chain. It says there on the slide that it stimulated BT investment in first generation broadband, and it also stimulated the LLU regime when it came through in the UK. Both those things are true. I should point out, in all modesty, particularly I wasn't involved at the time. there are a lot of other people involved in that, obviously, and you know, BT was the big mover in broadband at the beginning of the decade, and of course we then Ofcom was very important in creating the local loop unbundling regime, and we had massive investment from Sky and Carphone Warehouse and a number of other competitors. But the Broadband Stakeholder Group did play quite an important role in, as I said, stimulating the process. After that, probably from the sort of 2004-05 periods, 2006, broadband just began to plug away, and the BSG didn't do much, to be perfectly straightforward. And then it produced a report called the Pipe Dreams Report, which I'll come back to, which actually marked a new period in the BSG's history when it began to focus more heavily on next generation access or superfast broadband. So just a bit more background on the BSG, its formal role as advisor to the UK government on broadband issues. This is an important point here. The members include people from right the way across the value chain. Not all these names will be familiar to you, but some of them will. So on the content side, we've got BBC and ITV and Sky. On the fixed infrastructure side, we've got BT, we've got Virgin, which is the cable company, Sky, Carphone, and Tiscali. Mobile infrastructure, we've now got mobile operators involved, so three in orange. Equipment manufacturers, you'll know and understand. The decision influences there, PACTA, the Independent Producers Association, the CBI is the Confederation of British Industry. The CBN is the Community Broadband Network. And again, it's quite interesting, this whole picture, because community broadband in the rest of Europe outside the UK is quite an important instigator of next generation access. So for example, the Noonan project in the Netherlands is an example of a small community getting together to install next generation access. And consumers are represented by the Communications Consumer Panel, that is the Ofcom, it's a rebranded Ofcom Consumer Panel. So they are involved as well. The key bodies involved are the Executive Committee, and basically to get onto the Executive Committee you pay £15,000, and that is the prime source of funding for the BSG. It's not a big organisation, it's a very small organisation, and when I say small, there are three full-time staff and me as a non-exec, and that's basically it. And what we do is we commission work of one sort or another. Going back to the Pipe Dreams report, we identified the absence of NGEA as a potential issue for UK competitiveness. It's really interesting listening to the Minister today talking about the same types of issues in New Zealand. We don't see it, or we didn't see it in 2007 when this came out. We don't see it as an immediate compromiser of UK competitiveness. But we do believe that some of the really intractable, difficult issues, which I'm going to discuss in a second, need to be thought about and researched such that we could in due course make rapid progress. As it says there, the report raised four groups of issues: policy questions, how the business model should evolve, regulation, and then policy initiatives, what government should actually do. Just to give you an example of one of the policy issues that we took a look at, it was the cost of fibre, and this takes fibre to the home and fibre to the cabinet or the node, you see the biggest number there is 29 billion, so that's the cost of fibring Britain to the home. But if you only do two-thirds of it, then no surprise, the cost is less than half that. And equally, if you do fibre to the cabinet, you get similar types of relationship. And we commissioned a piece of work to look at that issue, which was done by Analysis Mason, very good piece of work. And again, one of the interesting things about that was we got the industry as a whole to participate in it. So this wasn't a sort of, as it were, a BT estimate of the cost. It was an estimate of the cost in which BT contributed to some of the thinking, but so too did Sky, so too did Carphone Warehouse, and a number of the other players in the UK. And so, in a sense, even though obviously those businesses compete with each other, nevertheless, there is a sort of common framework of understanding which they've all bought into. In terms of the underlying cost. We're just about to commission another piece of work on wireless, and again, I think this is something we might pick up in the panel discussion. wireless is beginning to play a much, much more important part in the debate, and so we want to provide equivalent types of cost estimates for wireless coverage. Another piece of work that we commissioned was looking at the sort of public value, social and economic value of next-generation access, high-speed broadband, which, having just read the Castalia report yesterday, features in Appendix 2, and it begins to at least structure the problem of public value, or structure the thinking about public value, although I don't think it provides the final answers. Right, just to sort of complete the picture a little bit on the BSG, we don't just focus on NGA, we also look at some of these issues: net neutrality, child safety on the internet, protection of intellectual property, online content regulation and digital inclusion. As with any type of industry-led body, there are issues which it's easy for us to deal with, which tend to be analytic. They tend to be about production of evidence and data. If we are trying to resolve, for example, let's take protection of IP, we play a useful role in ensuring that where the content side of the broadband business and the distribution side of the broadband business has a good dialogue, but we tend not to be able to produce the solution to those types of issue. Just to give a bit of background on UK broadband as a precursor to some of the issue discussion in a second. This is where we are. On the left-hand side of the chart, you can see that perhaps one of the more interesting features of UK broadband is that there's more than one platform delivering broadband. We have cable in the form of Virgin, and mobile broadband has begun to be a feature of the marketplace over the last couple of years. But if you look at overall broadband penetration on the right-hand side, you'll see that we're not doing badly. And if you look at the league tables for overall broadband penetration, you'll see we're a bit ahead of New Zealand, but not massively. It's an okay performance. But if you look at fibre deployment, then obviously we're a long way behind some of the countries identified on that chart. The other issue is that if you go along the bottom, it says that coverage is much higher than take up, and again that's one of the sort of underlying issues which I think is worth perhaps picking up. Should policymakers be worried about take-up as much as coverage? Because that isn't generally the case. Right, just in terms of sort of what's actually going on, take the left-hand side of the chart first. We had Virgin announcing that they were going to upgrade their cable network to deliver 50 megabits a second. Good news. That I think was one of the stimuluses for BT subsequently announcing that it would spend £1.5 billion on fibre to the cabinet, which was prospectively going to cover 40% of the population. And as I said earlier, there's been the takeoff of mobile broadband. We had a prior to the Digital Britain report, we had a guy called Francesco Caio, who was the ex-chief executive of Cable and Wireless. He was commissioned by Stephen Carter, our communications minister. He was commissioned to take a look at the broadband market, and it was a fairly neutral report. It certainly didn't provoke any sense of panic. It said that the market is functioning. For example, the investment intentions of Virgin and BT was pretty much steady as you go. But then subsequently, I would say things have changed a bit. I think that report came out in September, something like that, of 2008. Obviously, the global financial meltdown has occurred subsequently, and I was interested to hear the minister here talk about that stiffening resolve rather than weakening it. There's been no regulatory resolution. The BT announcement of investing £1.5 billion was dependent on a regulatory deal being struck with Ofcom. That hasn't happened. And spectrum blockages is identified there. So if mobile is going to play a big part in UK broadband, it's inevitable, or it's required, that additional spectrum become available and that the transition to LTE becomes something that is well managed. But that's proving very problematic for a number of reasons. We were going to auction off the 2.6 gigahertz band in the summer of 2008, we still haven't resolved a lot of the litigation associated with that. So that's as it were sort of where we were, and then, as I said, we've had this Digital Britain report. The interim was published at the end of January, and the final is published in May. Now, the person responsible for this is Stephen Carter. Stephen, for those of you who are not familiar with the UK, was the first chief executive of Ofcom. Prior to that, he was the chief operating officer of the cable company, now rebranded Virgin, and did a great job in Ofcom, where I worked very closely with him, and has now, by some chapter of accidents, ended up as the minister. It is the Digital Britain report is the vehicle he's using to resolve a whole series of really big issues. Next generation access is one of them. The universality of broadband, which hasn't been a big issue in the UK, the spectrum issue I just talked about, public service broadcasting, which I'm not going to talk about, and intellectual property and how to deal with file sharing. There are a number of smaller issues as well. So, for example, digital radio. And as I said, the intention is to galvanise the UK industry. Talk a little bit about the big issues. The big issue with respect to NGA is government intervention. As I said, I think up until 6 months ago, the underlying assumption was that the market would deliver, and that although government intervention would always be kept as a possibility, there wasn't any massive need to plough ahead on that basis. universality, I'm going to tell you what the nature of the debate. I think it might surprise you that there's a notion that we should try and have universality by 2012. It's the date of the London Olympics. there's a big debate about what that means. Is it 98%? Is it 98.5%? Is it, how do you define universality? And what is quoted as the target is 2 megabits a second. So it's a very, really quite a low target. Again, we might debate the relevance of universality. It's interesting. Universality is more important in Australia, apparently less important here, has been raised up the political agenda in the UK. Spectrum. SMP stands for the Spectrum Modernisation Period. And the idea is that Ofcom has been very, very unsuccessful in resolving a lot of the litigation and disputes over the past few years. The Digital Britain report designates, quite an interesting device this, designates the period up to the end of April for the industry to come together with a sort of a set of proposals that will protect competition but facilitate a sort of orderly transition to LTE. The Stephen Carter proposed that something called an independent spectrum broker be appointed to facilitate this process. And I have been luckily enough, I am the independent spectrum broker, which is generally regarded as a hospital pass by all and sundry. So I've got till the end of April to try and get the operators to agree a proposal which will be acceptable to government and to Ofcom. It's a very interesting process. I'm not going to talk about public service broadcasting unless people are particularly interested in it. Intellectual property, the idea is that, the idea that's floated in the Digital Britain report is that some sort of rights agency is set up which will enable the music industry, the content players, to address the issue with the ISPs. Are the ISPs a mere conduit or not? Seeing how I'm doing for time, I think I've got about 3 more minutes. These are, in my view, some of the big questions. Is public intervention in next generation access correct? The Castalia report I read, as I said, it obviously takes a particular view, I think it's saying no, don't bother. I think the Australian experience. For my money, I know there are a lot of Australians in the room, but that seems to really bring to the fore the real dangers of intervening too quickly and in the wrong way. I think it's something. I was very, very happy to hear the minister say that he was going to take time to think about intervention, because I think it's perfectly possible to get it very, very wrong. What form should the intervention take? I thought that was one of the more interesting parts of the Castalia report, by the way. what's the so there was an issue of the former subsidy should take, but there's also the issue of technological neutrality, which, you know, Stephen Joyce was saying that fibre was the area that as it were, the sort of market failure was arguably occurring in. And I'm not so sure about that. I would say that one of the things that have emerged in the last year in the UK is that mobile does have a really important role in delivering next generation access in the UK. again, perhaps we can come back and discuss that. Isn't take-up more important? I've alluded to that earlier on. That's, you know, the big issue is arguably not getting from 95% coverage to 98% coverage, but getting take-up from 60% to 80 or 90%. What's the right balance between a liberalised and directed outcome for spectrum? Obviously, that in my role as the broker, that's a very interesting issue. Ofcom has a very, very, I think, you know, I hope there's no one going to report this back to Ofcom. I think they have a slightly doctrinaire approach to spectrum liberalisation. I'm not sure that always produces exactly the right outcome. And the most fundamental issue of all, in my view, particularly if you believe in markets, is how can the business model evolve to align investment and risk? And I think that applies, you know, again, you know, the mere conduit issue. Shouldn't ISPs take more responsibility for protecting creation of content and be responsible for that? Equally, on the other side, isn't there some way of ensuring that if you launch something like the BBC iPlayer, I'm not sure whether you've got something equivalent here in New Zealand, if a content player launches something like that, there is no way of an ISP at the moment, using with current business models, there's no way of an ISP benefiting from that. So I'm going to round up now. This is my last slide. Where to next? The role of the BSG. It provides practical help to Digital Britain report on next generation access, on universality, and through my role as an independent spectrum broker. we'll continue to provide policy inputs, and we'll be a critical friend to government and to Ofcom. I hope that's been interesting, useful, but I feel I should now get off the podium.